and so on. Mail, a mail file or a mail message starts off with the word mail, and then it contains some other things that identify what the message is about, and then finally, finally there's the message that somebody actually wanted to send. Okay. Actually, I'm close enough to the end that I'll just stop. The major point that I've been trying to make has been that it is something that looks good enough that it actually could be implemented quite soon. Now, can we have the lights back on, please? Okay, yeah. Lee?
When you're...
I'm done.
Oh, okay. Question for clarification?
Yes.
The address.
Oh. I'm sorry, the address will be in the proceedings. I think it's in the program. It's 920 Dennis Drive. Palo Alto, do you have a program?
Yes, it is in the program.
Okay.
Where in the program? That's the number of page 14.
Page 14?
Okay, I have to watch out for clunking sounds here. Our next speaker, Dave Calkins. Just handed me a bio. Dave Calkins has worked on computers for longer than he cares to remember, with one short digression into the biofeedback business. He is currently involved with electronic mail systems at Cable Data Associates. In the past, he has worked on a number of distributed computer systems, including the ARPANET, a microprocessor-based satellite system for the military, and large office automation system. Okay, Dave Calkins.
None of which you'll be happy to hear I'm going to talk about. In the last session, which I was involved with, I had a kind of a scary experience. I went to sit down, and on the chair I found a great number of these things, which seemed to be 74-141s, and for a horrid moment I thought, my God, I've finally been replaced by 64 dual inline packages. So if anybody knows who owns these, they're in a pile over there. As a short introduction, I'm going to... What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to give a very, very brief discussion of networks in general, because I think all you probably know more than I do about them. And secondly, I'm going to talk about some of my ideas about a hobbyist network and how we might design one in a very concrete way. I'm more hardware-oriented. I got some ideas about how you might actually use 8080s and things and modems to put together a network, and I'd like to really do that. In fact, I'm organizing a hobbyist... Oh, can everybody hear me? Possibly not. Now you can. I'm interested in organizing a hobbyist network. I think I agree with Mike. I think one can be started very rapidly. I've got an interest group going of people who would like to participate in this. And if you'll come and see me afterward, if you're interested, I'd like your names, or I'll give you my name or whatever. And let me indulge in a real small amount of history. I think John McCarthy covered a little in the last session. I'd like to say that this whole thing was really started by a man named Paul Barron, who invented packet switching back in 1962, which is the way that the ARPANET and most other computer networks now work. If I can have the first thing, I've given you a few definitions, and it's the way I'm going to talk about networks. And what is a network? It's a bunch of nodes which are hooked together by links, and through the links you push packets. And I'm going to say more about each of those things, hopefully briefly. It So I don't think we need the lights off, really. And as far as I'm concerned, you can leave the lights on. I think everybody can see the thing. Then you can see me and I can see you. Let's have slide two. Turn it up. Yeah, the letter should be right side up. Good. That's a drawing of a network of the kind I like to build. The round lettered things are nodes. The long line things are links. And what happens is I take a packet, which is a block of information, and I transfer it from node to node to node. For instance, if node C wants to send something to node P, you go across the red line, and C sends a packet to G, and G sends the same packet to M, and M finally sends it to P, where it belongs. Now, what does a packet look like? Let's have the next one. Well, that's what a packet might look like. There's three pieces in it. There's the header, which is the addressing information. That's where the packet's going to go, and maybe, as shown here, maybe where it came from, and some other stuff which I won't discuss. The main thing is that thing in the middle, that's the message. That's what I'm sending. It can be English text, it can be bits, it could be Budo. As far as the network I'm building, I don't care. The thing on the end is the checking code. That's very important. That allows the receiving node to examine the message and say, the packet rather, and say, is it any good? If it's been screwed up by burst errors on the line, the checking code won't work, and the node can proceed accordingly. Okay. Let's see, 2 and 6. Okay, let's have slide 6. This is the same network, and it shows an interesting thing. It shows what happens if half the nodes are ripped out of it, the ones marked in blue. And the interesting thing is, with the network we saw, I can still communicate. C can still talk to P. And not only can C talk to P, but it can talk to it in two different ways, through the lower red track or through the upper black track. And that's a characteristic of networks I think is very important. They are very resistant to the absence of nodes. And if you've got a hobbyist computer and you're on the network I want to build, and you decide you don't want to play network games tonight, I want to build a network in such a way that I don't really care, unless a great many more than half the people decide not to do that, the network should still work. So this hopefully illustrates how that might work. This kind of network, the things I call links in an early hobby network might be telephone lines. They might also be radio channels. As probably a lot of you are aware, there is a network in Hawaii called the Aloha Network, which uses UHF radio to communicate between its parts. And I think that's a very promising mode of operation. I don't think it's one we can do early on, but it's something I'd like to keep available for hobbyist networks. So let me proceed immediately to hobbyist networks themselves and how one might look. And let's have slide 7. Yeah, good, that's slide 7. And these are the things that I think a hobbyist network should have, the attributes that are important. And let me go briefly over them. Number one is that it's composed of nodes, each node being a hobbyist computer. Each hobbyist computer equipped with a little piece of interface and a standard, and it's important that it be standard, network support software package. And it's a piece of software which has been developed, debugged, and is pretty much guaranteed to be bulletproof. Item 2, all I guarantee is that I'll pass messages back and forth and small files. Item 3, it should cost close to nothing for the communication bandwidth between the nodes. 4, it's distributed. There is no requirement for computation, storage, or control resources outside the nodes. Now, note the word requirement. It'd be nice if there were things, and I quite agree with Mike and others that I'd like resource centers where there are big files, and I'd like host computers that can do fancy computation. But early on, all I care about is that I can send messages from node to node without having to buy anything beyond the nodes themselves. 5, I sort of already said it. The thing should be reliable, even though there's a lot of notes gone, and even though we're using crummy phone lines. 6, the architecture and protocols should allow expansion. We're going to learn. We're going to be able to do new things. It'd be nice if we can do the new things without it costing you a new arm and leg to do them. And finally, 7, and I think Mike touched on this too, it should be able to run late at night when you're not using your machine anyway, and you might as well have it as a note on the network, and the phone plant is essentially idle. Okay, there are several possible types. I've mentioned 2, one based on the phone system, a more advanced one based on packet radio, and an even more advanced one based on satellites. Now that kind of blows your mind, okay? A hobbyist network based on synchronous satellites. But I understand from the amateurs, the radio amateurs, that they're going to put up a synchronous satellite in about 2 years. And so that's very interesting. And if they can do it, I'd like to get a piece of that bandwidth, because that makes network design very easy. Okay. What might a telephone network look like? Let's see number 11. All right, go ahead. I'll leave that on. Yeah, go ahead. I'll do that one. Now, do the one you had. Okay. Let's see what the hardware might look like. You need at each node a computer. Should be about 8080 size. You know, I don't think I can do it with a SCAMP or a F8 or anything that small, but, you know, 8080, 6800, 6502, that flavor machine. I need a full duplex serial interface. We'll see why in a minute. I need some memory. I need memory for buffer space for the messages, because what's happening, messages are coming into the node and they're going back out of the node. I need space for the network support software I talked about. Now, as a very crude cut, I'd say that both of those things are about 4 kilobytes in size. So to operate a node, I need a hobbyist machine, 8 kilobytes, and a full duplex serial interface. Also in green, it says offline storage. Some of the messages are going to be coming to you, the node owner. And it'd be nice to put them someplace. And you can't put them in the buffer space because that's being used for messages in transit. So more storage space would be nice for your own messages. Cassettes, floppies are nice. If you really want to do it on the cheap, paper tape is okay. So let's see what a phone system would look like. Let's put the phone interface thing on it. And this is a complete node with the interfacing to use the dial-up telephone system as the links. And let me explain how it's going to work. The node computer wants to originate a message. It's got all the things that permit it to originate telephone calls. It's got a dialer. It's got off-hook control. So what it does, it takes the line off-hook, and it uses this dialer to dial up the number of the nearby node that it knows. And as soon as it establishes a connection, it ships its packet across. Also, that node it's talking to may have some packets for it. So since we got a good full duplex line, you ship packets back again. And my present thinking is that ought to be a 300 BPS modem. I think I can do 600 BPS, but 300 BPS is pretty cheap now, and I think that this whole thing has to be very, very cheap. Hopefully all that stuff in blue should cost less than $500, hopefully less than $200. And at this point everybody says, ha ha ha, but I have hopes. Anyway, pardon?
What would it cost today?
If I were buying everything off the shelf, I would say $2,000. But I think, like, I am now building a modem, and I know I can build it for a lot less than $100. And I think I know how to build dialers. A lot less than $100. Anyway, that's sell price. That's not build price. Building is, you know, a fraction of 2 or 3 down from that. Anyway, the box at the bottom is very important. Most of us have only one telephone line. You don't want this crummy network screwing up your voice calls. Voice calls are the reason you bought the telephone. So it's important that voice and data be shared and that voice be given priority. And I have a scheme for doing that, which I rather like. I'm not sure the phone company will, but I like it. And I'll run through it very briefly. A call comes into a node, the computer takes the line off hook and does the protocol, and it's the very simple modem protocol of doing the proper tone so that the calling modem knows that there is a, I'm not explaining it very well. You can tell whether it's a data call or not. You can tell if it's a voice call. You can tell if that's true within a matter of, say, hundreds of milliseconds. If it's a voice call, the computer synthesizes a ringing signal, both audible and on the phone line. So you're lying there in bed and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and the phone rings. At least you think the phone rings, really the computer's not ringing the phone. The phone is already off the hook. You pick up the phone and you take your voice call. Now, there are, Ron Crane, who's in the audience, poked an interesting hole in this, which is what happens if somebody calls me long distance? He's billed as soon as I go off hook. Well, turns out that's not really true. I think the phone company gives you several seconds of grace before they really start billing. But anyway, you tell your friends, don't call me long distance late at night, which is probably a good rule anyway. And secondly, if you call somebody, you hear the phone go whistle, whistle, whistle the way a modem does, hang up immediately. But anyway, this is all very tentative. I don't claim that I've got the best possible design. I think I've got something which sort of looked like it might work, and that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in something that work rapidly that I can get up experimentally within the near future. Well, how are we doing? It is now 5 minutes of five. How much more have I got to go? Let me do the map things. That's interesting. Yes, there's a map of the U.S. in there. That's kind of cute. Give me five more minutes and I'll run this real fast and I'll do the California map. That's a good one. How would such a network work if we built one? There's a map of the Los Angeles area. It's sort of. Thank you. I intend to go into cartography if I can't make it as a computer person. Now, if you lay that other thing on it, right, there is a 40-node, triply connected. No, not out in the ocean. The other way. Good. No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. That's good enough. Leave it there. That's 40 nodes to scale. Each of those green lines is 10 miles long. And the magic about that is everybody can talk to everybody else within their local calling area. I've done a little research about local calling, and it looks like that most local call areas are about 15 to 16 miles across. So 10 miles, I think, is conservative. And that says that node at Oxnard can talk to that node in San Diego by going only through local call areas. Now, I hasten to add, I don't know what the tariff obligations of this are. I don't know whether we'll all go to jail. All I know is that it's physically practical. Oh, no, now let's have the U.S. map. Okay. Okay, interesting question. How can you call in and out on the same phone? You can't. What you do is A calls B, B calls C, C calls D, D calls E. It's slow, it's ugly, but I got some numbers in a minute that'll show that it's not terribly ugly. Okay. Okay, another question. One more question at this point. Okay. It is illegal?
It's data switching on public net. It's government regulated. You have to be approved.
I can build a system so that I never have to bother with the instruments. I can take an ordinary instrument and do this. Okay, I don't want it. It's not a service. This is hobbyist. This is free. I'm not selling anything.
It may not take you the sort, but it's illegal.
Okay, well, I don't know. I don't know about those. You know, I am not a lawyer. I don't recommend this. All I know is that I think it'll work. And I don't particularly want to go to jail either, so I probably won't, you know. I would like attorneys, and I think I know one, to talk to about this, but all I know that I think it'll work. Okay. On to the whole goddamn United States. Where are the hobbyist computer people? Well, I've done a little hobbyist demography a little while back. And a result of that, you see that the three major places where hobbyist computers are the ones marked in red, not surprisingly, here, Los Angeles, and the New York City area. There are smaller concentrations in the places marked in green. And, you know, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Salt Lake City, various places. The states marked with zeros had, as of 3 months ago, no hobbyist activity that I could detect.
No.
Pardon?
Okay,
thank you. I don't have a pen with me, but you understand. So my recommendation is, hey, if you want to make regional networks, make them where the blue circles are, because that's where the most hobbyists are. And now I'll have the next overlay. And the interesting thing there is with very few long-distance hops, I can, well, up a little bit. It should hit all those green places. Okay, good. Thank you. With very few long-distance hops, I can get a cross-country net. And now the next overlay is interesting. Here is the ARPANET as it was in August of 76. And the one interesting thing is the square boxes are enormous concentrations of IMPs, TIPS, and host computers, like more than five or six. You'll see that two of the places where those are overlap Los Angeles and this area, and that the blue lines are surprisingly close to where the black lines are. So what I'm saying is I can get a network which can do ARPANET-like things rather rapidly at the cost of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 long-distance lines. And show me some nodes and I'll get you some lines, okay? I would like to move away from the phone system as rapidly as possible to a packet radio system. I think it's possible to talk the FCC out of some bandwidth. And what I hope to use is that this is something which is very, very much in the public interest. If I can get a computer network going of this flavor, I think the hobbyist movement will continue to grow at its present rather amazing rate. And if that's true, I can make a sizable fraction of the population of this country computer literate. And that's good for the country, and I don't think anybody can deny that. And so I think that I hope I can persuade the FCC to say, give me a few hundred kilohertz someplace up in the UHF band that I can do packet radio on. And if I can do packet radio, then I don't need the phone company. And where are we? We're now almost precisely at 5 o'clock. Let me say two more things about software, the network support package I talked about. I see it as having several major sections, and I'll just mention them briefly. A routing section which tells each node where to send the packet. You might put the node one. Have you got the one with the 16 nodes? You know, the first one with the black lines and the red lines and the... That's not important. Okay. Routing is, you know, how do you tell I'm a node? You know, suppose I'm node G and I want to send a node in, and I got something from C. How do I know where to send it? You know, I got three neighbors. G talks to C, G talks to F, G talks to M. Routing is that process by which G decides where to send it. Well, G ought to know enough to send it to M. And I think Mike's scheme of the zip codes makes a lot of sense because that should tell me these rough, you know, directions of transmission. So one part of the software is the routing package. Second part is obviously the check digit generation and test package. You know, I got a message, I'm going to stick a check digit on it before I ship it. If I get a message, the first thing I do is look at the check digit to make sure the message's integrity is good. The next thing is, whenever I get a packet, I send a smaller packet back and saying, hey, I got your packet. In other words, C sends to G. When G gets it from C, G sends a little teeny packet back which says, hey, I got it. That allows C to clear out its buffers. That's very important. Function which must happen is to keep the message buffers reasonably clear. And lastly, I've got to manage those packet buffers. If everybody decides to send messages to M, M is going to find he's swamped with messages. He has to have some way of saying, and one simple algorithm is simply refuse, say, throw away all the packets I get after number 23. But anyway, that problem has to be addressed. So with that, I will end, and we can have the discussion that Lee suggested.
Okay, we can get into these more general questions for everybody. Yes, there.
I just volunteer that on these satellites, not necessarily require a new satellite. Find a transceiver on an existing satellite will fill its useful lifetime.
Who knows about that?
NASA
and an outfit in New York called the Public Interest Satellite Association. Alas, I did not bring the address, but they are working on exactly that thing, and they want projects involving computer data. They've already got a lot of proposals from people who want to ship real-time video on 150 kilohertz channels. And I can, if somebody wants to get interested in that, I can give them further information later. Yeah.
In this area,
yeah, let me repeat the question. The question is, did I mean that going from Oxnard to San Diego, the way I showed, that each node would originate a call, dial the next node, and then that node would dial the next node, and so on, and you'd end up with 14 or 15 calls all chained together? And the answer is yes, that's what I meant. And what I'm saying is that the distance that the nodes were placed was very carefully spaced so that no node looks at any node which is more than a local call away from it. Presently, and I use the word advisedly, local calls are not charged for more than a minute or so. It turns out that I got some arithmetic in here which I didn't get through, which indicates that even with rather short calls, like 1 minute calls, I can get a lot of traffic through, enough to support 10 messages per node per night, which I think is a lot of traffic for a hobbyist network. Oh, you wouldn't, right. You go to bed, you turn the thing on, and you wake up in the morning and you'll find out how many it was processing. No, you shouldn't. The point is, you shouldn't get a bill because the calls to you, you don't get charged for plenty. The calls out are all local calls.
Unless the guy that called me programmed my computer.
No, the network software is very carefully arranged so that there's no way that he can do that. That's why I said bulletproof. Dad.
A couple of things. I go back to Ray Panko's admonition, which I've been saying for years also, is do not load onto a terabit. Because when the glitch takes a load, it goes away. Always.
True. That's why I want to move to radio. But I want to get running fast. The only one I know to get really going fast is on the phone. And maybe I'm going to have to say to the phone company, okay, I'll pay message units. And, well, let me take straw poll. If it costs everybody in this room $1 a night to be on the network, how many would be interested? Okay, I see. How many nights do you want to play? You
know? Once a week.
Okay, once a week. Yeah, all right. I see.
Look, that's the next point I wanted to make. One, there's an ORTS service in Southern California. I think I'm
here too.
Allows for me for $5 a month to spend 1 hour of dialing time to a massive, large area.
Okay, well, great. That's wait, but who are you talking to? See, I think it's an issue of what the network is for and what it looks like. I see this as a great big party line. A lot of people will originate messages of the to whom it may concern, I'm not doing very well, the CQ or to whom it may concern form, you know. Hey out there, does somebody know about why 6502s do so-and-so? And that's the kind of thing that I see I don't see it as a means. There will be person-to-person communications, but I think that this business of broadcast messages is going to be important.
The density of receiving versus sending is going to be terrible if you just broadcast. I get a message flow right now myself on a daily average running anywhere 20 to 70 messages a day, accumulated messages received or sent. And it's a day's work to handle 70 messages.
Okay, well that's too much, and I don't think the hobbyist network should look like that. But
you start broadcasting, I'm immediately, I get 70 messages a day that I have to at least look at. Junk mail.
Okay, well maybe then I say maybe. Okay, maybe we want some cost attached to it so that to discourage junk mail.
I can believe that there's a bulletin board in there and you send it to that place and people can then go there and read the bulletin board. It's your community information exchange.
Okay, well,
But you don't put junk mail in everybody's mailbox. That's too expensive. If he wants to look, he can go look.
Okay. Well, I'm here. I've done a little of that. It appears that for what I call regional networks, like 40 nodes, and for 300 baud, and for 10 packets a night per node, it looks like it'll do it. But I've not done it in detail the way I should.
Okay.